Just gone 7:30 on Tuesday night's Arena. 51551 is the text at RTE Arena on Twitter. Filmmaker Joanna Hogg has delved into the deeply personal for her new feature, The Souvenir, which will be in cinemas this Friday. The autobiographical story focuses on a film student called Judy, played by Honor Swinton Byrne, who embarks on a relationship with an unreliable yet fascinating and seductive older man called Anthony, played by Tom Burke of Cormoran Strike fame. Earlier I spoke to Tom Burke about his work on the film. First of all, let's listen to a clip. And in this scene, Anthony is giving Judy his tuppence worth on a film project she wants to get off the ground. It's about shipbuilding in Sunderland.
We don't know what the inner machinations of their mind are or their heart. We don't know. But that's what we want to know when we go and see a film. We don't want to just see life played out as is. We want to see life as it is experienced within this soft machine, within this...
The life of Tony and his mother, the lives of real people. I'm not making that up.
Why are they more real than me?
They're not more real than you.
Am I more real than you?
No. I think we're all equal in that. I think we're all as real as each other. There's no competition. It doesn't matter that they're not real people. I mean, I'm not trying to make a documentary. I'm making a feature film.
Now, are you sure?
Yes, I am. I'm making a feature film.
You're not trying to document some received idea of life up there on the docks, the daily grind, huddled, listening to the wireless.
Well, I am, but I'm creating something new with it.
Well, good.
Maybe you'd begin, Tom, by actually, how do you describe this character of Anthony that you play in the film The Souvenir?
I've seen that sentence saying untrustworthy but charismatic young, I don't know if it necessarily says young man, so many times. That sort of stuck in my head, but obviously that's the last thing I was thinking about when I was doing it. I mean, I felt like he was somebody who, was suffering and was fragile and had spent a lot of time and energy cultivating a note of certainty in his voice to sound like he had all the answers so nobody could kind of get through to the, you know, dark hole inside of him, at the centre of him. So, and then I felt he cared passionately. I realise I'm not giving you a buzz line.
No, that's fine.
Cared passionately about art and about how Julie was going to become involved with art and her journey as a filmmaker. And, you know, he did a lot of damage in many ways, but I was aware Joanna wanted a degree of... well, wanted a real complexity to the relationship and to honour that, to give this... to sort of, and I suppose I had to celebrate him in all his... with all his chinks.
Yeah, because there are chinks there that we find out about. And you mentioned Joanna Hogg, the director here. And this character of Anthony is based on a real-life character, former lover of Joanna Hogg's, in fact, when she was a film student in the early 80s in London. What kind of dynamic did that real person aspect add to things? And the fact that Joanna knew him and loved him, or certainly, you know, had great regard for him.
There were moments where I found I was saying, because the dialogue is improvised, it's not scripted dialogue, and I had occasion, and I was trying to obviously be as unedited with myself as possible, because that's kind of the point of improvising, in a way, to just, you know, let whatever happens happen. And it was a few times I said something during a take to Julie/Joanna. And it was a strange feeling to think Joanna was kind of, you know, just in the other room watching it on the monitor, because I was saying things that were quite brutal. And I suppose, but I mean, let me finish the sentence before I give the footnote. Brutal, and inevitably had somewhat been informed by my meeting Joanna and getting to know Joanna. But when Anthony was being brutal, I felt he was actually being... You know, for instance, there's a moment where I say, you're a freak. But I think that's Anthony's way of giving somebody a compliment. I mean, I'm sure Anthony would have described himself as a freak, as much as he was trying to fit into a certain kind of archetype of class. He was a very eccentric man, and I think he knew that, and I think he prized eccentricity and celebrated it, and I think he could see Julie retreating back into a certain kind of version of a person and wanted her to honour her uncanniness.
So three girlfriends?
Yes, all called Desiree.
Mm-hmm.
Strange, that.
What were their names?
Miriam, Caroline, and Angela.
Angela?
Angela sang jazz.
They sound unbearable. I suppose they were frightfully beautiful. And lots of fun, and rode horses.
If you don't want to know...
I do want to know. I do want to know. Did Miriam play the cello?
No.
The violin?
No, she wasn't at all musical. She wasn't even pretty, actually.
That's not true.
Well, she had other qualities.
Like what?
Darling, I can't tell you in here.
Excuse me?
I'm just playing, Julie. Stop torturing yourself.
I'm not torturing.
Stop inviting me to torture you.
Ugh.
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 It's exactly how you make me feel when you're being like this.
Yeah, interesting that you talk about, you know, how eccentric he was in many ways. He also was a very well-read man. Certainly the character that you portray is a very well-read man. He's a man with lots of cultural references. I mean, the film title itself refers to a painting, and there are references to all sorts of... Paul and Pressburg, the filmmakers I mentioned in there, there are other cultural references as well. Did you find yourself having to, you know, gen yourself up, if you like, or inform yourself about the sort of cultural references that Anthony had? And I presume Joanna was a guide in doing that.
Yes, but you can't fake curiosity. So I was aware I could only find those bits of Anthony she gave me a whole load of things to look at, and some of them I thought, this is going to just be me cramming and this isn't going to come out in a way that sounds like somebody who's got a genuine passion for this. And there were things that I thought, okay, no, I sort of get where he's going with this. I can, you know, I can waffle on about that because it's... So I did, I did do a lot of reading, but I had to follow my own nose because you can't fake curiosity.
And how did that work, actually? You know, you're saying that there was no script there. What did Joanna Hogg, the director, give to you? I read that she talked about that she gave you scenarios. How detailed would a scenario be, say, for one of the dinner scenes or, you know, one of those scenes maybe in the gallery itself where you're sitting, Anthony's talking to Judy?
Well, she doesn't want to be too prescriptive because she's very much... you know, as a lot of directors are, if you think in terms of like directors who are working with a writer, their job is in a sense interpretive, and she's interpretive of the script that comes out during the first take, and she's given a few sentences about kind of what's happening, but yeah, she kind of gets excited by seeing what, you know, what happens in the moment. So, but then that builds as you go on, and she does very much help shape the scene.
Don't be worthy, be arrogant. It's much more sexy.
Do you like arrogance?
I think it'll get you further.
Because you are arrogant.
That's I know why. I'm arrogant.
Do you find yourself sexy?
Yes, all the time. It's hard for me to get through the day without...
I bet.
Taking a couple of moments out and...
I'm trying to concentrate on this. Don't distract me with your...
How long do I have to wait?
Arrogance and sexiness and...
Give us 3 minutes.
Talking about your... God knows what.
You know what I'm saying. You've got some preconceived idea about some Oxbridge version of a film director, and it's all bollocks. You just need to get out there and start filming, it's like Patrick said.
How important is class in the story?
It's very much about class, and I think in a way you could say it's about a very particular section of people. But I think if you go into any story with enough detail and enough enthusiasm for the uncanniness of you know, truth in a situation, then you create something that people end up resonating with from whatever walk of life, hopefully.
My name is Cormoran Strike. Wondered if we could have a quick chat.
You're not a cop.
I was. Royal Military Police. I'm a private investigator now. Just want to ask a few questions.
Listeners will also recognise you, Tom, as Detective Cormoran Strike, the J.K. Rowling series of novels, which you wrote under the pseudonym Robert Galbraith. It's back for a new season. What can you tell us about that?
Well, there's no particular reconciliation of that relationship, but, you know, I think that's its strong point, really. I think reconciliation in story is kind of the biggest cliche, you know. I think stories ultimately are best when they're open-ended. So that's fizzing away, but, you know, it's still open-ended.
Interesting, you mentioned their reconciliation in relationship. It's something that is there in the film as well, in The Souvenir, a kind of lack of reconciliation, if you like, a resolution between, in that relationship between Julie and Anthony. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think, but I think a lot of stories start off in the best possible way and let themselves down when they try and give too much of a reconciliation. And I always think stories are stronger that don't try and do that.
Tom Burke, thanks very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.